Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Steve Roberts with the George Washington University, sitting in today for Diane while she's off having a voice treatment. More than 1 million personal computers worldwide have been hit with a new type of virus called ransomware. Criminals encrypt your files and demand payment to unlock them. With me in the studio to talk about what consumers can do to protect themselves from the new cybersecurity threat, Brian Krebs, an author and former Washington Post reporter. His new book is called Spam Nation. Sherry Maguire is with Symantec Corporation. Those are the folks who keep popping up on your screens with saying your viruses are out of date, right? Your antivirus systems are out of date. And Scott Schober works for Berkeley Veritronic Systems, California. You can join our conversation. We'd like to hear your experiences, particularly if you have had an experience with ransomware. Give us a call, 1-800-433-8850. Also, our experts will try to help you understand how to protect yourself from this. And drshow@wamu.org is our email address. Welcome to you all. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
Brian, why don't you start by just giving us a basic definition of what ransomware is? And a lot of us not even familiar with this phrase.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a threat that gets on your system, and it does so surreptitiously. It might come through a vulnerability in your browser, something that's not up to date, or it might come through spam. But essentially, it gets on your system, and it looks for all the files that you might find valuable, so your music files, your pictures, your documents, what have you. And it quietly encrypts those with very, very strong encryption, probably encryption that probably the NSA would have a hard time breaking. And then when it's done with that process, it pops up a little warning that says, hello, you know, friendly neighborhood cyber criminal here, sorry for the interruption, but we've encrypted all your files, and if you want them back, you'll pay us some amount, some arbitrary.
Encrypted is another word for locking.
Yeah, they've scrambled the files, yeah. So they just wrapped each file in some kind of locker, and the same key unlocks all of those files, but you have to pay to get that key. And so essentially they say, and at this point there's a countdown clock usually. It says 72 hours to make a decision, to pay, to figure out how to pay, and that's a whole other discussion, or you can kiss your files goodbye.
And Sherry, talk more about how this gets into your computer. Is anybody at risk? Is it just certain people? I'm sure people out there want to know.
Yeah, so pretty much everyone's at risk for this, and that's why it's so important to keep your security software up to date, because most of the protections for new ransomware, virus, other kinds of malware are built into your security software. So that's first and foremost what you need to do to protect yourself. But that being said, the way that this
is do you have to buy commercial products like Symantec sells, or can you do this without that?
Well, certainly we like that.
Yeah, I know.
But there are freeware versions, basic antivirus available out there as well. So you do have the option of going with those. But the way that this type of ransomware malware gets onto machines is a couple of different ways. One is through what we call phishing scams. So you might be sent an email that looks very real. It might be disguised, for example, as an FBI notice or a local police organization notice. And you think, oh, wow, they've reached out to me to tell me that I've been infected, or they might even say that they have found child pornography on your machine and that you need to pay, you need to click first, and then once you click, you need to pay up, because then you get to the real site that then tells you that, in fact, they are going to lock up, encrypt your data unless you pay. Now, the interesting thing here is that a lot of times, even if you pay, your data is not unencrypted. And some of these criminals have gotten so sophisticated that they've actually set up help sites so that if you do pay and you can't figure out how to unencrypt your data, they've got a help desk online that you can go to that gives you the instructions to unlock your data.
How widespread is this, really?
There are millions and millions of machines that are being attacked every year through this particular threat vector. And that's why it's so important, again, to keep yourself, your security software
up
to date.
If someone is listening to this and saying, oh, my gosh, I didn't know about this. Scott, what can the ordinary person out there, one of our listeners, what can she do now to help protect herself from this?
Yeah, great question. One of the first things I always recommend that people don't do, back up your data. That's probably first and foremost. People do it occasionally. They do it when they're, you know, making adjustments or this or that. But if you daily back up your data, it sounds annoying, and it is. But there's
meeting
a lot of automatic.
On another system?
Yeah, another hard drive. Yeah. Sure. You could do it on another hard drive. I do it on a daily basis, and I have an archive. So I can go back to any day. And why is that so important? Because if you're a victim of ransomware, at that moment you realize, wow, my world has stopped. I can't access anything on my computer unless I'm either going to give in to the thugs and pay the fee, or I can at least go to the backup and delete everything there and start clean and have all of my data, and you can move on there, especially in a large corporation. And more importantly, and I think Brian touched on it, they're targeting specific files. So they can look at file types, the extensions on there, and they're going after IP. So maybe it's an AutoCAD file or in our business, a printed circuit board file, different things where there's certain valuable, tangible IP to a company. That's what they're going to target as opposed to your general
emails.
Because
that's what you're more likely to pay to recover.
Yeah, it's high value, exactly. You can't put a price tag on that if that's your livelihood.
What about the, as Sherry was also alluding to this, just daily practice. What should you not be doing?
Yeah, good point. She touched on a lot of good ones there. Certainly having virus protection, malware protection software, that's a given. Regular updates on your OS, security patches. Again, most people delay. They don't do it. They put it off. Do it on a regular basis. That's important. And if you're looking at something and a pop-up comes up, no matter where you are, don't click on it. Everybody is just inclined because it's designed to entice you, as you say.
If you didn't go looking for it, don't install it.
Yeah, that's, exactly. Don't do it.
Yeah, the patches, keeping the operating system up to date, super important. Almost more important, if not more important, are the patches for all the programs that plug into your browser. So we're talking about Adobe Flash, talking about Adobe Reader, Silverlight, Java, if you have that. Increasingly, the way they're getting in is they're going through vulnerabilities that there are patches for, but people fall behind on these. So it's super important that people stay up to date with this stuff.
And is it also important to stay up to date with your operating systems? I gather that some of the older Windows systems, which have not been refashioned to provide these kind of security, should someone go out and just install new software packages?
Yeah, I think when we look at where these attacks are coming from, they are generally coming through email, and so they try to trick people into doing something they shouldn't, and they are coming through the browser, and they're exploiting vulnerabilities. So yes, the operating system updates are super important. They're almost, but the browser stuff is probably a lot more important these days because they are attacking the user, and the user is interfacing with the internet via the browser.
And also using safe web searching. So there are many of the search providers today, the Googles, the Bings, etc. They scan websites on a regular basis. We do it for our Norton product even. And when you search in safe browsing mode, you actually will get a little icon next to each website that says whether or not it's been scanned and it's safe. Now, that doesn't give you 100% assurity, but it does tell you at least that that site doesn't have malware on it. And so if you click through to that site, you do have a level of security there.
Now, Scott, also, one of the things I've read is have very complex, long passwords. Now, I got to believe everybody who's listening to me and listening to us has the same reaction, which is, will you stop with the passwords? I mean, mm-hmm. It drives us all crazy to try to keep them all sane, and everybody wants their own passwords. So the natural tendency is to have similar ones. It's the only way you can remember them. But is that a bad practice?
Well, it definitely is. If you have a simple password, you can hack it, a 6-character password in about 3 to 4 seconds typically. Complex passwords, uppercase, lowercase, numbers, symbols, typically 3 to 4 years. So all my passwords are 15 characters with a mix of all that.
And how do you remember them? Come on.
I don't. And the key is I write them down in my secret black book that I keep locked away. And that's the only method for myself.
You write them down with a pen?
I write it down with a
yeah. Do you even have one?
Invisible ink. Yeah. Yeah, I do it the old-fashioned way. There are programs you can buy to help remember them and create them. You can use different phrases to help remember, and there's a lot of tricks and things, but good old-fashioned passwords that don't – you know, think about a dictionary. If there's any word in the dictionary that's in your password, it's a bad password. Your anniversary, your pet's name, your wife's name, any of those things – take it out. And probably most of the listeners out there have poor or very weak passwords.
I would say just one thing. The password manager thing is key for most people. They're not going to be able to remember all these passwords, and particularly ones that are secure enough to be good passwords. So that's where password managers come in. They'll pick one for you, and you don't have to remember it. It'll remember it. So when you go to that site and ask you for a password, it'll go ahead and, you know, enter it in for you. All you have to remember is that one master password, which is very, very strong. And for the strong passwords, I always say think in terms of passphrases. So a long sentence that you can remember, maybe your first line from your favorite book or movie or song or something. And that way you only have to remember that one password, and your program does the rest.
Yeah, I'm still not convinced. But we're going to go to our callers and our messages in just a minute. Brian Krebs was just talking from the Washington Post, Sherry McGuire from Symantec, Scott Schober from Berkeley Veritronics. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in for Diane. Give us a call. We'll be right back.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Citrix with GoToMeeting, connecting people and businesses in face-to-face online meetings from any device, featuring HD video conferencing, screen sharing, and meeting recording capabilities. Learn more at GoToMeeting.com. From the investment firm of Raymond James, wealth management, banking, and capital markets, learn more at LifeWellPlan.com. And from Joyce V. Hale, seeking a world challenged and invigorated through a deeper understanding of ideas.
Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. Our subject this hour is ransomware, or this new virus that is affecting a lot of computers. And the way it works, as we've been discussing, is that you get a notice that your computer files are locked up, and you got to pay a ransom, hence the name, a ransom to unlock them. Now, joining us on the phone from Dixon County, Tennessee, is Jeff McCless, a detective at Dixon County. It's outside of Nashville. Now, that police department was a victim of ransomware attacks in October last year. And Detective McCless, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Why don't you give our listeners a real-world sense of what happened? I mean, what does this look and feel like?
Well, basically, one of the users here at the sheriff's office was online and clicked on a link. The nearest that we could track it was, we think it was a link that was on an online radio station. Don't know exactly what the link was, but it inserted this CryptoWall 2.0 ransomware onto his computer, and from his computer, it branched out across his drive letters and encrypted the majority of the attachment files for our report management system, which included everything from autopsy reports, scanned in documents, investigative files, things of that nature. About approximately 15 years of of collected data that was collected by the sheriff's office, and it also encrypted our backups for those files because of the way that we were doing our backups at the time. So we were pretty much we lost a large portion of our reports just in a matter of seconds.
And presumably, a police department is particularly vulnerable because, you know, this isn't just emails. This is data and witness testimony and records that you need to do your job. So it was pretty high value for you.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've been in communication ever since this occurred. I've been in communication with a lot of other police departments and government agencies that have had this happen to. I get probably anywhere between 5 and 7 calls a day, especially when there's coverage on it, about the things that they're encrypted. And we actually didn't have any evidence files or anything like that encrypted. We just what we had was bad enough.
And Detective, you got a ransom note. They wanted you to pay $622 in bitcoins, which are these sort of strange internet based currencies. What did you do?
That's correct. It was actually 1.2 Bitcoin, but as I didn't really know a whole lot about Bitcoin when we got this ransom, what it does, it drops a text file in every folder that has files that were encrypted saying how to – it gives very complete, polite, and literate instructions on how to go about paying it, which is one of the more infuriating parts of it is that they're so polite about basically encrypting all of your data. But I found the whole process of buying and transferring Bitcoin to be one of the more difficult parts of it because it's just not something that I'd ever done before.
Now, you consulted with the FBI, and they basically told you that you had to pay the ransom if you wanted the files back?
Yes. Yeah, they said that they certainly couldn't recommend one path over another, but that with the level of encryption that was on these files, there was no known way to unencrypt them using any technology that they have right now. They said basically you're going to have to make a business decision on whether you want to pay the ransom. And historically, the people that have paid the ransom have gotten the encryption keys to unlock their data. But you know, certainly they couldn't make any sort of guarantee. And we had to balance our own personal, as a law enforcement agency, and my personal distaste for paying a ransom. We had to balance that awful feeling with the fact that, you know, this was critical data and we really needed it to protect the community.
And so you decided it was just as a business decision, as you point out, that it was cheaper and faster to pay the ransom than to try to reconstruct all these files.
Yes. Yeah, and it's not really the money that's the worst part. It's just, you know, you don't want to send the message. You don't want to make this profitable for the bad guys. But at the same time, you know,
you are, after all, a police department.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But you point out that one of the really hellish dimensions of this, once you made this decision, actually figuring out how to pay the ransom was not easy.
Right, because you don't want to get victimized a second time. And, you know, the very first thing that I started doing is Googling Bitcoin, and it's a gray area. There's not any regulating body. It's not well tracked. It's just sort of a person to person method of transferring value. And you know, I didn't want to be victimized twice or set up my department for being victimized twice by buying Bitcoin that was fake or making a payment to a Bitcoin dealer that wasn't legit. So that was a very difficult part of the whole process.
And did you eventually figure this out? Did you get your files back?
We did. We were able to get our files back. We made the way that the crypto wall, the version of crypto wall that we had was it gave you 7 days to make a payment or the ransom would double. We paid it on the 6th day. We were able to get all of our files unencrypted, and then I promptly changed pretty much everything that I do security-wise for the sheriff's office. I'm a detective with the agency, but I'm also what passes for the IT director. So I basically have been in touch with a lot of different industry consultants and a lot of hardware manufacturers and things like that have offered assistance and support in securing our network to a much higher standard than it was before.
Now, you say you get calls every day. There's been some publicity about Dixon County, and one of the reasons why we're calling you, because you...
Yes.
We appreciate very much your being with us. And final question, all of these other departments who are calling you, either which have been victimized or are afraid of it, or other agencies, what are you telling them? What's the advice after having gone through this that you tell them when they call you?
Well, typically they ask a couple of different questions. One is, has there been any way that I know of to get around it? And the answer to that is no. There's still not any way to unlock the RSA 2048 level of encryption that they're using on the files. As from my understanding, from keeping track of the Dell website that has the security risks, that it's still this infection is still out there. And if anything is spread around, they want reassurances that, you know, if you pay the ransom, will you actually get your files back? And I share with them my experience and I share with them the advice that the FBI gave me as far as no guarantees. But I think the biggest thing that I can help them with is the aftermath, sharing some of the things that we've done to secure our facility and some of the different backup procedures and recommendations that we've done afterwards. I hope that's the part that they listen to the most, no matter what their decision is on whether to pay for their files or not. I hope that us being victimized and me going on the radio shows or having the press that's been done on it, if it's helped them to some people to secure their devices against this sort of intrusion or to recover from it, then hopefully that's done some good.
And a final question, Detective, just good folks at Dixon County, they come to you and say, just from a personal point of view as opposed to an agency like a police department, any advice that you have been giving to them?
Yes. I think backups are a big part of the strategy now. This would have been if our backups hadn't been encrypted, we could have just restored to an original to an earlier date. I think that backups are probably the most underused resource for recovery from these sorts of things. Viruses aren't the sort of viruses and malware these days isn't the sort of thing you can just eradicate and go on. They all leave traces or they all leave risks after they're gone. So, backups are and just keeping everything updated and keeping. I heard earlier one of the gentlemen was talking about password security. That's huge. People just have to take a more involved interest in their cybersecurity these days. It's not like you can buy an off-the-shelf product and be 100% secure. You've really got to do a little bit of research and kind of understand what you're up against if you're going to be on the web.
Thank you so much. That is Jeff McLiss. He's a detective from Dixon County, Tennessee. Thanks so much for being with us, Jeff. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Great. My guests here in the studio, also experts in this, and what did you learn from Scott? What did you from listening to the detective? Any got a particular reaction?
Well, certainly I can somewhat sympathize with him and state he's really not alone. Just looking at the stats from last year in 2014, Crypto Wall 2.0, there's an estimate over 1 million victims of it, and they've probably netted somewhere in the neighborhood of about $30 million. So they're very successful. Again, these cyber hackers in using this technique of ransomware, he's in a tough call. He's trying to answer to the public there and at the same time do what's right. You don't want to give in to somebody's ransom. Would I do it? Would I give in? If I had my backups? No way. Of course not. But he didn't have the things aligned there where he could, you know,
and
give
also,
in there.
And also, Sherry, he was in a particularly vulnerable position given as a police department. Not everybody's quite so vulnerable, but as he said, he had to make a business decision.
Yeah, I My big takeaway is just to say thank you to Detective McLiss for actually coming out and speaking about his experience. So many times the victims of these attacks, both government entities as well as businesses and, frankly, consumers, are afraid to talk about it because there's a sort of a shame the victim mentality out there. But as he talked about, anyone can be subject to this. And that just goes to the need, as Scott was saying, for and Detective McLiss was saying, everyone needs to take an active role in their own cybersecurity. Just like you lock your doors every day, you need to make sure that you're preparing and protecting your online data. And there's many different ways that you can do that.
Brian, what's your take on that?
Oh, well, one thing I wanted to mention was one of the most frustrating parts, in addition to actually figuring out how to get money into Bitcoin, which is a huge challenge for people, is a lot of times people do have antivirus. It doesn't detect it, or it detects it after the files have been encrypted. And what it does is, this stuff is not hard to remove. The threat is does not try to stay on your system. And in fact, antivirus does a pretty good job of getting rid of the threat. The problem is if it also when it also gets rid of that key, that public key that sits on your computer.
Meaning, if you remove the you de-virusize your computers, you eliminate the key that will restore your computer.
You eliminate the key that you are able to go back to the website and say, hey, this is me, these are my files, now give me the private key and here's my money. And so and that's really frustrating. There was a law enforcement, federal international law enforcement investigation against an organized cybercrime gang that was doing this, and they took it down and they got access to the back end servers, and they could tell how many people got infected with it and how many people actually paid. And it was really depressing. I think only like 3% of the people who got infected paid. And that tells you something about the challenges here. Even people who do want to just say uncle and pay may have a difficult time doing that.
I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. We've got a lot of emails from folks who have questions, so let's try to run through a bunch of them. Here's a tweet from Holly, and there are several like this. Would backing up your computer every night help? Scott, you were talking about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I do it. I'm an Apple guy, so I use Time Machine, so it automatically does it. Once it's set up, it's a separate hard drive, and it just automatically backs it up every night.
Hard drive in your computer or in the cloud?
No, separate from the computer.
Yeah.
Separate from the computer, so it's got a wireless connection. It's Wi-Fi, close proximity, so it still can be locked up.
Is that
secure? No, it's probably $500 or less. Not costly at all. Easy to do, and that's the key. You want to do something easy or you're not going to do it.
Right. Good point. Email from John. Will a backup disk clean this up, or does it stay on the computer anyway, Sherry?
So there's two things that we recommend. One, obviously, is backup, because that's the data that you're going to need to go back to so that you don't have to pay this. So the first thing is to make sure you've done that backup and recovery disk. The second thing, then, is to use a removal tool, as Brian was saying, that you can then safely clean the machine and remove the malware.
Here's Tracy asks, if you back up your files, but that hard drive is connected to your system, can't they still encrypt it?
Yes. Yeah, and this is part of the reason.
That's kind of what the Tennessee folks were talking about,
exactly.
Right?
So this is a much bigger threat for the types of networks where you have a small work network where everybody sort of have access to a public drive, and it's telling that we're hearing about this mostly from public organizations because they have to talk about it. They can't hide the fact that they spent money to pay for this. It gives you an idea. But the backup stuff is really important, and it's part of the reason why I do backup regularly, but I keep my backup disk disconnected from the computer and disconnected from the network until I need to backup. And that kind of makes it more difficult to do automated backups, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the main reason is so that it's there when I need it. And if one of these threats, God forbid, gets on my system, I would never forgive myself.
But there are also commercial companies who do this, like Carbonite and others, right?
Yes, right. Offsite backups, for sure. Yeah, that's actually a really good option.
And Paul emails us, is this a threat for just Microsoft Apple, Linux? Is it across the board? Everybody vulnerable? Sherry?
Everyone is vulnerable to this. We saw last year for the first time mobile ransomware popping up on Apple and Android devices even. So this is something that's spreading to all the types of devices that are connected to the Internet.
Now, you're an expert on Wi-Fi. Talk about this dimension of it that Sherry just mentioned.
Well, certainly, as mentioned there, from a smartphone perspective, in 2014, just the Android operating system alone for Android phones, there's about 4 million cases of ransomware reported. So that's staggering if you think about it. And I'm sure the iPhone is not invulnerable either. It could be ransomware as well.
Is it the same guidance in terms of protecting your iPhone, or are there specific things you can do in terms of the Wi-Fi?
Yes, you got to be cautious, because what does everybody do with their phone? They're either backing up to the cloud, or they're syncing to their computer again. And if it's synced to your computer, and again, ransomware gets on there, they're going to have your contacts and everything locked up there. So you want to use caution there again, and use backups, as Brian mentioned. It can't hurt to have a backup and remove it, or have automatic backups or Carbonite. A lot of different ways you could do it there, but backup is key, I think.
But you've also talked about, Scott Schorber, of making sure that people turn off their phones too, right?
Well, from a Wi-Fi standpoint, there is where oftentimes someone will find the weakest link. They'll try to hack into a computer network using Wi-Fi, and then they'll pull up in the parking lot, for example, and they'll try to obtain the password. And again, if it's a simple password to get into the network, there's tools out there to do it.
That's Scott Schorber. He is with Berkeley Veritronics. Not in Berkeley, California, but in New Jersey. Sherry Maguire from Symantec. Brian Krebs, author and former Washington Post reporter. I'm Steve Roberts. We're going to be back with more calls. Stay with us.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. From the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education, dedicated to empowering education changemakers across America every day to improve the learning process. Learn more at edutopia.org. And from Joyce V. Hale, seeking a world challenged and invigorated through a deeper understanding of ideas.
Edelman takes the swing pass. Edelman's going to throw. Deep downfield, wide open. Amendola, touchdown.
Veteran sportscaster Al Michaels knows how to call a touchdown. On the next Fresh Air, he joins us to talk about his craft, his career, and working his ninth Super Bowl next weekend. Join us.
Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane Rehm. Our subject this hour, ransomware, a new trend in computer viruses, which will appear on your computer, infect your computer, demand a ransom, hence the name, and before they unlock your files. Three experts with me: Brian Krebs, former Washington Post reporter. His company is KrebsOnSecurity.com, and he's written a book called Spam Nation. Sherry Maguire, works at Symantec Corporation, one of the leading sources of virus protection products. And Scott Schober works for Berkeley Veritronic Systems. A couple of more emails I want to read. This one is interesting. This is from Kelly. I constantly receive pop-up invitations to download anti-malware software into my commuter from your company, Sherry, along with others. Are these actually malware in disguise? And is it dangerous to click any button within these windows, even the negatives such as not now or close?
So most of those pop-ups that are unsolicited come from imposter security proposals out there, criminals who are actually trying to get you to click on things. So, you know, our recommendation is unless you actually receive, you are a Norton customer and you actually receive that your software is about to expire, that you should just exit out of those pop-ups. Do not click yes, do not click no, because they can still, behind that yes or no button, sit an executable that will take you to a site that could in fact infect your machine. So you got to be suspicious of everything that it's unsolicited.
I think it's pretty likely that Kelly's machine's already infected with something. And if she's running any virus and hasn't detected it, something like Malwarebytes, anti-malware, probably will pick it up and delete it. But she probably needs to do some kind of scam with some third-party software there.
And what about taking your computer to, you know, a computer expert, either in your own company or commercial systems? Does that work?
Ka-ching.
Mm. Ka-ching.
Make sure you're watching them, too, while they do it, obviously.
God, you guys are really suspicious. I'm going to go home and pull the covers over my head. I mean, it's obviously the whole world is crashing down.
Trust no one.
Tweet from Chris. We had several like this. Bitcoin made the extortion easy with their platform. Why not sue Bitcoin? What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I think that's tough. There is some legitimate uses for Bitcoin. Unfortunately, there's many unsavory people selling firearms, drugs, and other illicit things. So it's tough, and it's unregulated. It's used on a global basis, so I think it's tough to go to sue them. It's probably not going to happen. I think it's just use caution if you're going to use it. Just think twice before you get involved in that, and especially with regards to this, because you'll probably pay out the money, and in most cases with specific to ransomware, you're probably not going to get your key back.
Not get it back.
Not likely.
Let's talk to some of our callers, and I'm going to start with Matt in San Antonio. Matt, welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
The one thing I haven't heard all these callers mention was shutting down your computer at night. We've dealt with this in our industry a lot, and so we implore our contracts use a service called OpenDNS, which keeps that ransomware from calling home and retrieving that code or that key that starts to lock your computer. So you may get that ransomware on your computer, but it's not able to call out to lock your computer at that point. So a lot of the ransomware that's happened through the PCs that we deal with have happened overnight. So we're asking our contracts to shut down their PCs at night.
I think that he may be referring, and I don't know the specifics of his situation there, Matt, but you may be seeing these things pop up overnight because it takes them time to re-encrypt all the files, and you don't get the notice until many hours after it's finished this process or started this process. I do want to mention a couple of resources here.
Let me answer Matt's point. Would you advise people to do what he's advising?
No, I don't think that's very effective prevention strategy. Most of the attacks happen because of an action that people do or do not take, such as not installing the latest software updates or clicking a link or attachment that comes in an email that they probably shouldn't be clicking.
Okay, let's turn to Matt in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Matt, you're on the Diane Rehm Show. Welcome.
Thank you, Steve. One important fact that I would like to just point out is actually this goes with saying what Matt did just say is the new CryptoWall 3.0 actually will boot your computer over IP, and I had my computer shut down completely. I was infected last week on Sunday, and had it shut down after finding the infection and deleting everything, and I was left with just the encrypted files. And miraculously enough, I came home, and my computer was on, and it had the ransomware popped up on the screen, and I'm like, oh, gee golly, what's next? But another thing I would like to point out is that... I just shut it off. I've left it there so far. I've been waiting. I've been looking online. And so far what I've seen is that there have been some people having success with getting their files decrypted by a few programs that break RSA encryption. I don't have the information in front of me.
Be very careful there, Matt. Proceed with extreme caution. Anybody who's telling you they can break that is probably trying to sell you something else.
That's not necessarily true. I would like to just say that one thing that you guys are saying is take backups. Yes, 100% take backups. Make sure they're offline. The new CryptoWall 3.0 is indeed taking network backups and anything on the network that is infected. Over and encrypting the files. Another thing I would like to point out is that it has been specifically Microsoft they're using to encrypt the files, and they're using a local service on the machine to encrypt files. And then they are, in turn, sending that key back out. The third point was just Java being the main culprit of the infections. I've spoken to several people over the last couple of weeks that almost all the infections that came through advertisements that are on websites. And just by going to the website and having the advertisement on their page, you don't have to necessarily click on anything because the Java exploit that they're using that is, you know, patched as of last week or, you know, whenever they do this.
Thanks very much for your call. Sherry, you got a response to Matt?
I think he raised a lot of really, you know, a lot of pertinent points about his personal experience with this, and I found it really quite interesting that he hasn't done anything just yet.
Yeah, turning off your computer is not a long-term solution.
It is not.
No.
It is not.
But he mentioned Java, which is something I've been trying to get people to get off their computers. Most people have no use for this. A lot of people have it. They don't even know they have it, so that means they don't even know they need to update it. And the problem is it's one of those things I mentioned earlier that plugs straight into the browser. So you browse a site that's hacked with this ransomware stuff, and you're going to have a bad day.
Let's turn to Benjamin in San Antonio, Texas. Welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be on the air with you.
Happy to have you.
One of the things that I want to bring up that plays into the whole Java thing on the web browsers is, I haven't heard anyone bring it up just yet, is that a lot of browsers out there have the ability to incorporate add-ons such as script blocking software. And what this will do is that it will basically prevent websites from running scripts until you give them the okay to do so. And it's these scripts that permit the websites to do these actions like what you were talking about with the Java. Another thing that I would like to bring up is emails. I was in the Navy, and one of the things that we got drilled on relentlessly was phishing scams.
Right.
In particular, something that they call spear phishing. It's very much like phishing, only it's a lot more targeted. Email, they will actually try to make it sound like it's someone that you know.
Right.
Like in the case of, in the Navy, someone in your command who's trying to hand down an instruction. So you have to be very careful. One of the things that I do suggest that people get in the habit of doing is when they get an email that looks the least bit suspicious, even the least bit, it's a good idea to check the email header. Usually the email browsers will hide this thing. But there's usually some sort of tab or something that allow you to do a drop down, and you can actually see all the email header information. And you can actually see where this email came from.
Thank you very much, Benjamin. Scott, talk about this whole dimension is of phishing, which is one of the ways in which a lot of ordinary people encounter these threats.
Yeah, good point. Very common, very effective, because, again, if we're naive, if we're somebody innocent, a lot of times the elderly will often click on it because it's very convincing. The cyber hackers are using toolkits and other means to develop very convincing phishing attacks. So if it's got a logo for your bank or something else, click here to update your information. A lot of people are doing it. So if a million go out, maybe 10,000 people actually click on it and give into it. So as mentioned there, she said if it's suspicious, myself, I'm not going to dig in and try to analyze it. And this, I'm going to delete it. If it's suspicious, just delete it. Why play around with it? Because time is lost there, and something could be downloaded. So
well,
just delete
I've noticed that when friends or associates' address books get hacked, the phishing schemes will come in with a message from in the subject line will be someone's whose name you recognize.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
But your view is just delete those if they really want to find you, though.
Exactly. I had it the other day. A close friend, I received it. I looked at it. I knew within a second. I hit delete. I picked the phone up and called them.
Right.
And they said, wow, yeah.
Happened to me some months ago. I must have got a dozen calls from people saying, hey, you've been hacked.
Exactly.
And it was relatively easy to change passwords and things. But still, as you say, they don't need a lot of people to be fooled. They just need...
No, and oftentimes a lot of people are targets, and there's millions of Gmail accounts, Yahoo accounts, everything out there. So
we're also seeing these cyber criminals using traditional methods of social engineering. So they'll actually target a specific individual, send them an email, and then they'll pick up the phone and they'll call and they'll say, hey, I just sent you an email with that invoice. Would you please take a look at it and confirm for me whether or not you're going to be making that payment? The natural thing to do is say, oh, sure, and click on the attachment, and now you've become infected.
Let's talk to Steve in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Welcome, Stephen. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I just want to make reference to a call earlier. He said that he asked, why don't they just sue Bitcoin? I just want to make the point that Bitcoin's a decentralized currency. There is no central authority to sue. It would be kind of like saying, why don't you just sue cash if they use cash too? And then also, I just want to say that cash has a lot of features, advantages, benefits, but you can use it for nefarious things too. So I just want to make sure Bitcoin doesn't get, it's always drudged around in a bad way. And I just want to say it can be used for a lot of really wonderful applications. And I think it's sort of unfair to always tie it to things like this.
Yeah, the caller's exactly right. There's actually multiple virtual currencies like Bitcoin that are sort of cryptographic, very similar to the way they work the same way, but there are lots of them out there. So just attacking one isn't going to do anything.
Okay, Steve, you had another point quickly?
No, I really don't. That's it. I just think...
Good. Happy to have you on the show. Thanks for the call. I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. We have time for one or two more, and... let's talk to Jim in Hummelstown, Pennsylvania. Jim, you're on the Diane Rehm Show. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a quick question. I'm very religious about backing things up. I back it up onto a flash drive. And my question is, if I happen to be infected with any kind of a virus, is that going to infect the flash drive as well?
Who got an answer for that? What do you think?
If it's connected to your computer while you're infected, chances are that malware will try to encrypt the files on that removable drive as well.
That's
yes.
Right.
So even using a removable drive is no guarantee.
If you're going to use a removable drive, just unplug it when you're done backing up. Okay. That's the answer.
Is that a useful system? Do you guys recommend that? People all have flash drives, thumb drives. I mean, without going to Carbonite or a large.
I think it depends on the person. Is it a consumer and it's something simple and they want to do it? It's a good way to do it, but again, they got to disconnect it and keep that in mind. And
memory is very cheap these days, so whatever device you decide to use is better than none.
time for maybe one more, and let's go to Jason in Louisville, Kentucky. Welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Hey, hi. How you doing?
Hey, hi.
Yes, I was calling just to comment on a few things. I'm a cybersecurity engineer. I've been in the DoD space for about 12 years. I've just now started helping out civilian companies with things like CryptoLocker and TrueCrypt and a few of the other nasty variants that are going out. There were some comments about, trying to remediate this threat. I would say one of the most effective ways to stay clear of things like this, number one, is to rely on your antivirus and your updates for your Windows machines, but not opening this in emails and staying away from spam and things that you are not familiar with is probably the best avenue for the layman, if you will, not to, to stay away from this virus. That's about it.
Okay, great. I think we have a consensus here about what people should really do. But for folks, perhaps, who haven't heard the whole show, in the end, let's go around and say, okay, you're given advice here. You're all experts. We want to be helpful to our listeners. Give us a checklist, each of you. What should our folks at home be thinking about? Scott, why don't you start?
Well, number one, if you're not backing up regularly, that's a no-brainer to me. Implement a plan where you do it regularly. That'll be step one.
And this can be backing up in many different ways, on a flash drive, a cloud, other kinds
exactly.
of systems, right?
Yeah, but start doing it. That's probably more important. Ask people how many times they do it. Most will say, well, I don't really do it that much. Start doing it. That's step one. Obviously, don't be clicking on anything. If it's suspicious, don't click on it. Delete it. Pop-ups on your mobile phone, on your computer, your tablet, whatever it is. If you got a pop-up, don't click on it. You're just inviting a malicious virus to come down there, ransomware, whatever the case may be. So just avoid it completely, and keep the updates, as we all mentioned before, your operating system, your security patches, your browser critical there, that you keep updating that. So all the security patches are in place to minimize the chance that you're a victim. And if you are a victim, be careful. Don't be too quick to pay the ransom. Think out the strategy. If you have backups in place, then you won't embolden these criminals by paying it, because they're just going to get very wealthy off of all of us.
Sherry.
Said it very well, Scott. Obviously, follow those best security practices. Have good security software. Keep a backup. Think twice about paying the ransom, and really be suspicious of any email that you are not sure of where it comes from. And be careful when you're browsing on the web as well.
Okay, and
that's pretty good. When in doubt, toss it out. If you didn't go looking for it, don't install it. A lot of this stuff, you browse the web, it says, hey, you need to update your Flash player. No, you don't do that. If you think you need to go update some program on your
even
system.
Even if something like Adobe says you need to update, don't do it.
In the process of browsing and this thing pops up, go to the place that made the software and get the updates from them. Don't do it from some pop-up, okay?
Because it could be a fraud.
It could be some site telling you you need to update and it's actually malware. How do you know, right? So you go to the place, you get it. Two tips I want to mention. One for business, thing called, it's free. It's called Crypto Locker Prevention Kit. And it actually sets up a set of group policies to make it harder for this. And then the other is Crypto Prevent. And this is made for, it's a free tool made for individual users.
Okay, that's Brian Krebs, author, former Washington Post reporter. His book is called Spam Nation. Sherry McGuire has been with me from the Symantec Corporation, and Scott Schober from Berkeley Veritronic Systems. Thanks all for being
Thank
with
you.
Us.
Thank you.
And I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in for Diane, and thanks for spending the morning with us.